To spray or not to spray, that is the question. Whether it is nobler in the mind to suffer the insatiable appetites of outrageous apple moss, or, by opposing them with synthetic pheromones, end them. To spray or not to spray, that is the question.
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Welcome aboard out there. You are tuned into the 582nd edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in the Hunter Valley of Australia who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Nikki James on the boards. Hello, Nikki.
Hello, Michael.
Producer Carol Staff.
Hello.
And Parmley Taff.
Hello.
Folks, the problem is the light brown apple moth, an unwelcome visitor from down under that feeds on on thousands of plants and over 250 economic crops. Elbam, as it is called, has colonized the fleshy plant areas of the California coast, concentrating around the cities of Monterey and Santa Cruz. These two cities, in turn, border the nation's number two agricultural district, this salad bowl of the world, as the Salinas and Pajaro Valleys are affectionately called, produces billions of dollars worth of food crops every year, and that's billions with a big B. But wait, the story grows. A synthetic pheromone has been developed that some say will trick male elbams into mating with fence posts instead of fertile females, and thus eliminate the threat elbams pose to the nation's crops and gardens. Some would like to spray this pheromone from airplanes, which they say would cost less and be more effective than spreading it by hand. Others do not want the pheromone sprayed from airplanes, believing the spray might be harmful to humans and other living things. Those who say spray include the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the markets of most other states and foreign nations, including those of Mexico and Canada. Spray or we'll quarantine, and then you'll have to eat all that lettuce yourself, seems to be their message. Those who say no spray include a vocal contingent of Monterey and Santa Cruz residents and the governing bodies of their respective cities. Spray and we'll sue you to the South Pole and back, is what they seem to be saying. Caught between these competing interests and charged with protecting agriculture is California's Secretary of Agriculture, Eiji Kawamura, who must find a way to manage this conflict between city and farm. If Kawamura succeeds, agriculture may well continue to grow as a viable mainstay of California industry. If Kawamura fails and the light brown apple moth flies free, there will be little or no chance of managing the succeeding waves of invasive pests from around the world that are certain to come and take up residency in or near our cities. To spray or not to spray, that indeed is the question of the day. Here to help us explore the question we have, Eiji Kawamura, Secretary, California Department of Food and Agriculture. Secretary, welcome back to the Food Chain. Secretary?
Yes, go ahead.
Gotcha.
Okay.
I'm having this fun time with flying my board today, so got it all figured out now. Let's see, this is the second time you've been on the Food Chain. Last time we were here, you're with Western Growers Association, and we were talking about farms in the cities. And you're especially suited to for that discussion because your family farms in the cities of Southern California, correct?
That's right. We're urban growers down in Orange County.
And you also have a degree in comparative literature from the University of California, Berkeley, right?
That was my undergraduate work, yes.
So a farmer with a degree in literature.
That's right.
Okay, good. And also with us today, we have Dr. Bob Dowell, who is the entomologist for CDFA. Dr. Dowell, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
An entomologist, which, of course, is you're a bug expert, I guess, right?
Yeah.
And how much, I was thinking about this, how much of agriculture is concerned with managing bugs, and what happens if we don't manage bugs?
Oh, good heavens. Insect pests are one of the major competitors we have for our food supply.
Mm-hmm.
exotic pests are especially important. Two-thirds of all crop losses in California are recorded, are attributed to damage caused by exotic pests. So basically take a look at your food supply in your grocery store and figure out that as good as that looks, you're competing with exotic pests for that food.
And some of them aren't even exotic, right?
There's a number of native pests that are also important, but again, the exotic pests are the ones that cause the majority of the crop losses on what are in fact exotic crops also.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean by exotic?
They're not native to here. They didn't evolve here. They were brought here either by accident or they flew here on their own.
Mm-hmm. And now we're looking at the light brown apple moth, which is a import from New Zealand or Australia or both. Is that an exotic then?
Yeah, it didn't evolve here. It evolved in Australia, invaded New Zealand about 100 years ago, and was probably carried to California, very likely on living nursery stock.
Mm-hmm. Some years ago, of course, California went through this again with Mediterranean fruit fly, and that proved the control of the fruit of the med fly became especially problematic for CDFA because nobody wanted to be sprayed with malathion. Do you see some similarities in these two situations with respect to being the aerial application of control agents?
Yeah, I mean, basically, the public has great fear and anxiety about the aerial application of any material, whether it's CDFA spraying for medfly or light brown apple moth, whether it's vector control spraying for mosquitoes to stop the spread of West Nile virus.
Mm-hmm. Okay, folks, we're going to try to. I know there's a lot of you out there that want to talk with Secretary Carl Moron, and we're going to make the program available to you a little bit later, but I want to ask our guests three questions today. And once we worked over those three questions, I'll turn the program over to you. And the phone numbers will be 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080 here on the Central Coast of California. There will likely not be enough time for everybody to make their comments and no questions known, but if you do not get a chance to get in on the air today, you can always do so by logging on the forum page at metrofarm.com. as some already have, and making your comments known there. Gentlemen, I've been to a number of public hearings on the light brown apple moth, and note that there is a lot of contention going on here, maybe even more than there was that I remember over the med fly. Why has controlling the light brown apple moth become so problematic for the California Department of Agriculture? Secretary, we'll start with you here.
Let me go back to an opening statement that you had made,
please,
Michael, regarding the conflict between invasive species and insect pests and agriculture.
Yes.
I would certainly want to expand that the oldest conflict in the history of mankind is there are things that want to eat you or your food supply or something in your environment.
And that's what we say about the Food Chain Radio program. It's what's eating what radio.
That's right. That's right. And so, you know, for the urban folks that are currently those that understand this program and those that don't, you know, every day, whether they're dealing with in their own yards ants that get into their house or snails or termites, those are all, especially garden snails, many kinds of termites and black ants, those are all invasive species that were introduced here into California. And we're constantly then dealing with things once they get fully established in our environment. We can't eradicate them from California, but we try to keep them out of our houses, and that's called a pest exclusion on our own homes, for example. So when you have a termite, for example, in your house, you can choose not to do anything about it, but most people say no, they want to keep it out, but they're not eradicating it, they're just controlling it. In the same way for the state and the role that the Department of Agriculture plays, as well as Fish and Game and Health Services, our main goal is to keep these pests out first. If we can keep them out by using our international borders as people are coming through, and I keep on saying every chance I get, anybody listening on the radio show, please, when you're out traveling internationally, do not bring illegal or smuggled or even just good intention gifts that have not been checked and checked for bugs or other problems that might be carried with them. There's a very clear quarantine, and a lot of people are getting through with that. And then, in addition to that, other ways of entering through the cargo or through postal internet postal orders, people order things, bugs and plants and things that haven't gone through that system. So in the first place, we're going to try and keep things out in the same way.
In the second place, we'll have to wait till after this commercial break. Secretary of California Agriculture, A.G. Kawamura, and also the entomologist in chief of the CDFA, Dr. Bob Dowell, with us today. We're talking about the light brown apple moth and how on earth are we going to control this insect pest, or are we? Someone suggests the best thing to do is nothing. What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Welcome back out there. Michael Olson here. This is The Food Chain, What's Eating What Radio. And today we're talking about the light brown apple moth, which could be eating just about everything in the country if it left to its own devices. It's said to munch on thousands of different kinds. Let's ask Dr. Dowell how many plants this light brown apple moth is known to chew on. Dr. Dowell?
The list we've seen indicates at least 2,000 species of plants. That includes 250 of those that are grown for food and fiber, and over 1,700 of ornamental plants, including pretty much probably just about everything in your front yard and backyard.
Let me ask you, given the threat it is said that this critter poses, why are we having so much trouble convincing communities to allow us to control it? I guess that's kind of a political question, and so we'll go to Secretary Kawamura.
Well, I don't think it's much political, although it's played into the politics. We have tremendous policy in this country. I was mentioning keeping bugs out in the first place and diseases. That's called pest exclusion. That's a solid policy that's been developed, unfortunately, with very difficult lessons learned over the courses of years. If your listening audience is able to go online and take a look at a gypsy moth or even coddling moth, those are invasive species that we were not able to stop because we didn't understand the challenges way back when they were introduced. And now today, the complication of how quickly these pests can move everywhere through assistance from the trade and travelers and people, planes and trains, and just the movement of these kind of pests is so much greater than it ever has been before. Mm-hmm. When the urban populations, and more we see this, although that they're more and more disconnected from things in nature and things from outside, but more and more we also see this great resurgence of local food systems, and that's an exciting part of how maybe people can get back into understanding that if we allow these kind of pests in, we're certainly going to have to use more chemicals in the environment to get rid of them once they become fully established.
Which is what's happening here with the light brown apple moth, because those who are affected, the nursery growers here, are using some very strong pesticides to kill them, to keep them out of their nurseries so that they can sell their products.
And when this moth shows up in everybody's backyard and everybody's garden and everybody's landscaping, it will cause trouble, and there's a predictable amount of increase that the people could certainly see will occur once this kind of a moth that has such a huge range of things that it will feed on becomes established. We have a chance because it's small populations. This is the first time in North America that this insect, which was anticipated to eventually show up here, has been found. And by having this opportunity, and I call it an opportunity to eradicate with a pheromone, which is not even an insecticide, that's a whole other part of our discussion today, but with a new tool to eradicate it, we can get rid of it and assure that it doesn't spread throughout the country, and then that use of other tough tools that other people might try to use will not occur.
Mm-hmm. So why don't people believe you?
Part of it is a general misunderstanding, first of all, what the eradication versus control is. Part
mm-hmm.
of it is a distrust, and we see that distrust of government to do the right thing, whether we're talking all the way back to some of the tragedies that occurred with Agent Orange, for example. What has happened over the course of these last decades is there's been an absolute mandate for us to use safer products, and this is the kind of product of pheromone that people were screaming and shouting, and rightly so, for us to use. It's a very targeted single species moth perfume.
If that's the case, you know, I'm looking at a webpage from the California Department of Pesticide Regulation. It's lbamspray.com, and it lists Checkmate LBAM-F as a rodenticide. And as I understand a rodenticide, that's something that kills rats, right?
Yeah, as far as a rodenticide, would that be, it shouldn't.
It's listed on the California Department of Pesticide Regulation website as a rodenticide. There's a check there right next to its rodenticide. I think, you know, and this was brought to me by my producer today, and that's what she says. Part of the problem is the reason that people are having trouble believing you is that some of the information isn't quite collected and presented then.
Yeah. There's a tremendous amount of misinformation as well. So
yeah. And the other side is saying that this Checkmate is it kills fish, it causes penile deformity in baby boys and irregular menstrual cycles in women.
As well as being radioactive.
And on and on and on. And so there's so much misinformation going out there, and people are just going, wait a minute, stop, hold on.
Say that if any of those false claims, that misinformation was true, I would certainly not ever decide to help use this, what we consider a new generation tool that moves us away from classic insecticides. We would never use a tool like this, and that's what's disturbing is how much misinformation is out there. I'm not aware that there's a rodenticide label, and that just sounds very incorrect to me.
It sounds incorrect to me too.
To follow up on that, because this is as a pheromone, this has nothing to do with mammals. That's what's the beautiful thing about using a pheromone, is that for the first time we're able to get to a single species of moths, a specific family of moths, and deal with it, as opposed to many people understand what a BT is, a bacillus
right.
organism that we use to get at a lot of insecticides. In fact, most of all of us who use BTs as organic growers or conventional growers too use that to deal with different moths and butterflies.
It goes after everything. Well,
yeah.
let's give a little example here with respect to moss. Here we have something that targets light brown apple moss. Would it, in fact, target monarch butterflies as well?
No, that's this unique pheromone.
So it really is targeted to a very specific critter then.
And for us, it's the first time we've been able to use a tool in an eradication like this. And if we're successful, you can imagine around the planet right now, people are still using DDT.
Right.
People are still using, with everything they find, organophosphates. If we can be successful and we can get the support from public to take this big step forward in an eradication for a pest that ultimately will cause more problems in their own environment if it gets fully established. One of our biggest challenges has been trying to convince the same activists that are opposed to aerial application. I think most of them are saying it. We do want to eradicate the pest, but just don't go to the air with this because it's because of those concerns that they have.
Because nobody wants to be sprayed. That's why. It's just that's pretty simple.
But if they're going to be exposed to more things in the future because we didn't take care of this pest. That's a hard decision. Then everybody, it's not a hard decision, but it's a decision people need to make. It's an imposition, obviously.
There's the rub, isn't it? This can the city and the farm exist? Because if they do exist together, there's going to be an imposition from both sides upon the other. And if we want to have agriculture at all, we're going to have to somehow come to grips with the fact that, the other side, whichever side is the other side, is going to impose upon our way of doing things. If we live in the city, we're going to have to somehow come to grips with the fact that agriculture works in the dirt.
And I would like to state that the city and the folks that live inside cities have the same challenges from invasive species that the farmers do. In fact,
probably worse.
They're just as vulnerable, whether it's cockroaches, whether it's, again, rats in your home. When you find these things, everybody takes some kind of action, including not doing anything about them, but they do take action. And when we let these things become established, and in an urban environment, there's even less chance for control because a lot of people just don't control it. Look how people leave their swimming pools or their fountains out and back for mosquitoes to breed and breed and breed, and they don't take that step to help reduce the numbers of bad pests.
Well, I use mosquito fish.
There you go.
Folks, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking about the light brown apple moth with A.G. Calamaro, who is California Department of Food and Agriculture's secretary, and also the entomologist from CDFA, Dr. Bob Dow, and you. When we get back from this break, we are going to go to the phones. The phone number is today 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080, and we invite your participation today, so pick up your phones and join us. We will be right back. Please do stay tuned. Well, to spray or not to spray, that is the question we are asking A.G. Kawamura, Secretary of California Department of Food and Agriculture, and Dr. Bob Dow, who is the entomologist with CDFA. Gentlemen, let me ask you this, which is something that's been posed already to me about 300 times over the last week. Why bother trying to control something from coming into this country, because we simply can't do it anyway? We can't control the people that are overrunning the country. So why should we think that we can control the pests that are overrunning the country? Why don't we just let them come? So, Secretary, I'll start with you.
Well, our department, as well as departments of agriculture across the country, as well as other agencies, fish and game and health services too, when there's diseases, insects, or pests that come into our country, we have been mandated over the course of really centuries now, but the decades, to deal with threats to the public that come in this form, in the form of an insect or a pest. And we've had great luck and poor luck in making the decisions or missing the opportunities to eradicate significant pests. Some of your readers would know, or listeners would know, about a Japanese beetles or a codling moth or gypsy moths. We miss those opportunities to eradicate those. Currently, those pests reside on the East Coast, and we keep them out of California, and we have a great record here of keeping things like fruit flies, different kinds of fruit flies that would leave a maggot in every single fruit, whether it's a commercial or a backyard garden, unless you do something to mitigate that, to take care of it. We recognize that the very important role that we play that has been given to us by the populations of this country to take care of that, kind of like a dog catcher is supposed to make sure rabid dogs don't exist. Those authorities, those missions, those obligations we have, that's what we're when we have a department, that's what the obligation of the department is, to protect the life systems of this state.
Okay, Dr. Dow.
Take great pride in that.
Dr. Dow, what would happen if we just said, I'll come as you are?
Sometimes we have. What we'll see is several things. We'll see increased damage, and people typically respond to that, whether it's ants in their home, cockroaches, aphids on their flowers, by taking some kind of action. Most of the time, it includes some kind of pesticide. So we see increased pesticide use. That's what really ultimately is what we're trying to prevent, is these insects and other pests, exotics, from coming in, establishing and increasing the pesticide load in the environment, both agricultural and homeowner.
Okay, good enough, gentlemen. Let's go to the phones and see what we can come up with today. Let's start with Sam. Sam, welcome to the Food Chain.
Hi, thank you. So I'd first like to make a quick comment, then I do have a question.
Please.
So my you know, I know that Mr. Calamore and Dr. Dow, you guys are talking about misinformation being spread, and I understand that, but I would argue that there is also some misinformation being spread by the CDFA. Mr. Calamore, you mentioned that it's just a pheromone when it has been openly admitted on the CDFA website and also by Calamore and the toxicologist himself that there are a host of other inert ingredients which are labeled as toxic and carcinogenic that are delivered in a microcapsule plastic capsule, essentially, which has been revealed as being at potentially as little as 10 microns, which can be, which then has the possibility to lodge into your upper respiratory system and deep lung.
Okay, so let's have him respond to that, Sam.
Sure.
Okay, Secretary Calamore, how would you respond to that?
Well, she is correct in talking about what those ingredients are that are with the pheromone. There's inert ingredients. Those
right.
have been fully disclosed. And in this country, we have the EPA at the federal level, but California has always had this mandate that we want to be more, a little bit more assured in terms of the things that we might use in our state, in terms of things that would affect health or things that might affect the government, the environment. And when we look at that, we have California EPA, then, which has a branch of, called the Department of Pesticide Regulation. And other states don't have this. We do, in the Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment. Both of those are kind of the watchdogs in our state that make sure that whether it's a farmer or a backyard landscaper or anybody that's using, or cities that use different tools, that they make sure that they take a good hard look at these materials and they re-register for use in California these kinds of products. If the product that has for example, on these inert ingredients as well as the pheromones, they've passed that review, and the toxicology, and I'm not a toxicologist, so Dr. Dow might be able to work on this, although he's not a toxicologist either, when you don't have one on this show today. But they would have told us, and they will tell us, and they will absolutely alert us as to the possible potential for problems that would affect all those things that speaker just mentioned, whether it's anything in the realm of carcinogens, anything in the realm of toxicology to animals or sea life or any of those type of things. And we have been waiting for a chance to use a product like this that is the safest, most environmental friendly product we've ever had a chance to use. The governor of this state, for example, has mandated all the different secretaries pursue and look for environmentally sound methods to move our state forward. And in using this product, you can look on a label, and you can look at, we look on labels all day long in the things that we use every day, and there are ingredients that at some level creates toxic response or toxic problems.
I've heard that you can drown in a thimbleful of water. Is that true?
Water is a good example. What we have to really look on is always what is the danger from the dose, what are the experts that, and we have significant documentation that this product is the safest product we've ever been able to use in dealing with an eradication of an insect pest. And by being able to use a product and being successful with this, it will mark a whole new day for the whole state, let alone the country, let alone the world, on how we can address problems, especially when you don't kill beneficials like pollinators, bees, those type of things. That's what's great about having an advanced new generation product like this. We're able to put it into play because of the concerns that came out of the past of the kinds of tools we were using, or people were using, or governments were using years ago. This has all driven us to where we are today.
Okay, good. Let's go quickly back to Sam. Sam, do you have a question to follow up with?
Yeah, I do, actually. You mentioned that the toxicologist has said, you know, of all the potential problems that would affect people, and everything's been looked into. But in a meeting the other night, the toxicologist admitted himself that the effect that these will have on sensitive groups, including people with asthma and other things, has not been examined. And as you may know, a lot of the regions that are planning on being sprayed also represent areas that people obviously have cancer and asthma and other respiratory
illness. So your question,
illness.
Really quickly?
Huh?
What is your question, hon?
Well, essentially my question is, given that there's been over 600 health reports that have been dismissed by the CDFA, and given that there's no...
What is your question, hon? We're out of time.
Well, I'm just saying that how can you proceed further with spraying untested chemicals over millions of people, and can you categorically assure the public that no person, including one with respiratory conditions, will be affected by the spray?
Thank you for your question, Sam. We'll pick that up when we come back from this break. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking light brown apple moss, to spray or not to spray, with A.G. Kawamura, Secretary of California Department of Food and Agriculture, Dr. Bob Dow, entomologist, CDFA. And what do you think? Is it possible that you can spray something and guarantee 100% that nobody is going to come to harm? We'll ask the Secretary and the entomologist when we get back. Do stay tuned. Well, Sam is asking for a 100% guarantee that if the state sprays a pheromone over the area, that nobody will come to harm. Is that possible to offer a 100% guarantee that nobody will come to harm? Hard to say. You know, when the state first scheduled the spraying of the light brown apple moth, 62 people called in the next day, I think it was 62, and reported being sickened by the spraying. Only the spraying that night never happened. And so we wonder what happened to what sickened the 62 people. So if people are getting sick without even spraying, how can one guarantee 100% effectiveness that they're not going to get sick when we do spray? I don't know. What do you think, Secretary Kawamura?
Let me make sure and address something that the speaker had mentioned. There is no way that our department or the state of California dismisses complaints when it comes to pesticide reporting. We have a very good system in place that allows for people to make their reports, to make sure that whether it's through, and then that goes through the agricultural commissioners, the Department of Pesticide Regulation at EPA, and ultimately goes to the Department of Public Health. And in this case, with this pheromone application, those, it's not 600, they've gone through some of the duplications in the 470, I believe, in that range. Those complaints are being very seriously monitored and studied by the Department of Public Health and by EPA, as is the pattern here in California. We're very proud of what we do in California, and my mandate is as much to protect the public always as it is to protect the environment and the food system. That's what our department has to do. And so that we take it very seriously. If there are complaints, that we will follow through on them. At this point, those different agencies, the health agency and the EPA, has not notified us that there is a connection to the spray. If they do and when they do, I have always said that we will stop the spray, because that's something we can't tolerate. We've got a great tool to help eliminate future pesticide use in our environment by, if we can eradicate this pest now. But we are cognizant that if there are complaints, and I want to make sure, and we understand there is a hypersensitive part of this community that the smallest thing can throw their systems off. We know that, and it's a part of a larger problem. It's not this pheromone that's the cause of all of this challenges. It's many things in our environment that they have to deal with.
So can you guarantee, Sam, 100% safety? Can you do that with anything?
No, we can't do that with water if we were spraying water. There's no way to guarantee what can or can't happen. But we definitely know that negligible risk, negligible toxicity is one of the things that's driving this program, because we recognize that we have a chance to use a material to eradicate a pest, and by doing so, prevent its full infestation, not only of our state or not only the other 49 counties that don't have it right now, but the rest of this country, the rest of North America. Again, this is the first time this pest has showed up in North America. There's other pests that we choose not to try and eradicate because they don't pose a big problem. Mm-hmm. This one does.
Okay, Bruce?
Yes. Hi, Michael.
Welcome to The Food Chain.
Mr. Secretary and Dr. Dole, just want to talk about the food processing in Santa Cruz County in 2005.
Oops, I guess we lost you there. I'm going to try to pick you back up. Call back in, and we'll pick you right back up. Let's go to Roy. Roy, welcome to The Food Chain.
Hi, good morning. I think it's real easy to just focus on the pheromone aspect of this program, but mm-hmm. the eradication program also includes the use of chlorpyrifos in nurseries, which is a highly toxic organophosphate, and that's going into our water. It talks about or includes the use of permethrin and BT in our backyards and along telephone poles where we walk our dogs and take our hikes and ride our bikes. These are things that are completely ignored with regards to the environmental toxicity. They're not benign. These are highly toxic to the environment, to the water, and to bees and to monarch butterflies.
Okay, your question? Your question?
No, that's my comment.
Your comment?
That this part, the toxic part of this program, which is going to go on every month for 10 years, at least that's the time authorized, is completely ignored. And I think this is a deficiency in CDFA's presentation of being honest with the public.
Okay. Secretary, how would you like to respond to that?
Well, I'd like to ask Dr. Dow, who is our director of this eradication project, to address that. But what I want to say is that the different tools, when people are saying don't do an aerial application, do something else, some of those other ground application methods are some of the other things we have proposed. And so in our proposals and presentations at city halls, at county supervisor meetings, at town hall meetings, we if you're able to come and see that presentation, there's nothing being hidden or nothing being concealed. It's a very transparent process that we have here. Our website, CDFA, www.cdfa.gov, has a full description of everything that we are attempting to do on behalf of this state. So, okay. Dr. Dow?
Dr. Dow?
Yeah, I think, first off, this is not going to be a 10-year program. We've set up internal reviews every year, and if we can't demonstrate to ourselves and everybody we're making success, this program is not going to continue. This is not a locked-in forever.
So if it doesn't work, we're going to stop it?
Yeah. And okay. The gentleman is correct. We are currently a number of nursery men using chlorpyrifos, and that is somewhat frightening. And if you expand that, if we don't eradicate, more people will use chlorpyrifos as the moth expands its range.
So neighbors will be spraying neighbors with chloral whatever it is, right?
Well, it's called Durisban.
Durisban.
We listened to at one public meeting, a master gardener. A woman came in and talked about how she's completely organic, but her neighbors aren't.
And
they're spraying for pests, and they're not even sure what the pests are that they're being sprayed for.
We're going to have to take a quick break. Right back. Food Chain Radio, to spray or not to spray. Do stay tuned. Well, this from Mary on the fax. Folks, just keep making it more and more difficult, and every farmer will give up. Then we can all eat God knows what in our food from China. That's what Mary has to say. Let's see what Zoya has to say. Zoya, welcome to the Food Chain. You've got...
Good morning. I just want to tell that I see a lot of stuff in Soviet Union. These people who are making leader by themselves don't know life at all. And they don't understand that I already see beans from China in Whole Foods. They want us. They destroy our energy, and now they want to make us dependent on food, on China, and they will never control what is in and what garbage there is.
Thank you, Zoya, for making that comment. Let's go to Secretary Kawamura. How difficult can we make it for farmers before they all give up and we eat food from China?
Well, let me make a real important point that California is the leader in organic production. It's the leader in sustainable practices for producing food in this nation. We're very progressively looking at how to continue to have a viable, vibrant food system. And when I say food system, it's a culture of agriculture that comes into play here. You see this great locavore, this great local food system starting to take place throughout the country. That is going to continue to happen, continue to thrive. But at the same time, we feed the rest of the country, and we feed many other countries as well. We're just a large agricultural state with great blessings of resources. Protecting those resources is our number one, really our department's intersecting the life systems that allow us to have this kind of a system is the charge of our department. When I see criticisms, I'm an appointee. Everybody would recognize that. And whether it's Governor Brown, Governor Duke Majian, Governor Wilson, Governor Davis, or Governor Schwarzenegger in this last 20-30 years here, we all face these tough decisions of how do we protect this state from challenges to our food system, to our environment. We have zebra mussels, we have gypsy moss that we were in your area down just recently, 20 years ago, so you don't have deforestation caused by a gypsy moth because we did an aerial application then 20 years ago in your backyard in Felton to keep a very big pest out of your area. And so the people that are protesting against this application, whether it's they're just protesting the intrusion with an aerial application, and that seems to be the number one.
That seems to me exactly what the problem is that nobody wants to be sprayed from an airplane.
And we wish we didn't have to use an airplane. We wish we had found this infestation earlier and we could have done a ground attack, if you will, a ground challenge, a ground solution only. And there's plenty of eradications we do currently around the state. This last year, we had 14 different eradications to keep out Japanese beetle, to keep out a gypsy moth down south, and we were able to maintain and stay on the ground and not get up in the air. Unfortunately, and I say this, unfortunately, this pest was found in a wide enough area that we don't have the logistical ability to treat it by the ground only. We do have the chance to eradicate it, and that's, I guess, a blessing, because it could have been that we found it even later. If it hadn't been for that professor in Berkeley that found it, unfortunately, we might have missed another year or so and then suddenly seen it everywhere in the environment, and we would have lost this opportunity to take out a pest that's going to cause some trouble potentially across this country if it gets
established. Well, thank you so much, A.G. Kawamura, Secretary of California Department of Food and Agriculture, Dr. Bob Dow, entomologist, CDFA, and thank all of you for tuning in. Remember, cheap food isn't. Stay tuned next week for more What's Eating What Radio.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.